Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen. It's up, it's up. And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way,
it's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast for a special edition episode, March Madness. Joined by our friends from the single best site for March Madness advice, TeamRankings.com. I'm Bobby Sylvester, and here with me are Tom Federico and David Hess. Guys, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, Bobby. How are you doing?
Doing awesome. This is my favorite week of the year, and I'm so excited. Like, guys, I tried so hard to work all day, and your site was just calling out to me. I lost the battle for like an hour today, and I'm certain there's going to be like another dozen hours before games tip off, because there's so much information out there. Like, I can't believe it. I could literally do this from the moment brackets come out until opening tip off and still not get through everything you guys have on your site. It's amazing. I love it.
Yeah, there's a lot there. And I think sad part is I personally don't even get to look at it all until basically after the tournament starts. We're so busy doing stuff, working all night. But yeah, you know, we try to give people their money's worth, and that's the goal. And there's a lot of data there, and just help people make a better decision is our goal. And data's the way to do that.
Of course. Yeah, we were talking before the show, like a lot of the people who are listening to this probably don't sit around and watch NCAA basketball all year, and they think that they might be at a disadvantage. You're not. It's not about the matchups and the specific players, and it's just math. It is just math. And if you have the information at your hands, you're going to make the right decisions. And guys, I know you've got to be zombies right now because of how busy this week is for your site. So thank you for coming on. We've got a fun show planned today that should shed some insight into how you all can dominate your bracket pools and survivor contests.
Great. Let's get to it. I'm excited. And you're right. Yeah, we pulled an all-nighter last night, but it's the computers are doing more work than we are. We've got 18 servers over at Amazon.com just crunching data all night long. So
wow.
Luckily that's there. We offload the heavy lifting. Yeah.
So before we get into the meat of it, I just want to give you all your due credibility. Like, it doesn't do as much for me to just say, this is the best March Madness site ever. I mean, I think my listeners trust me since, you know, I begged them to pick up Cody Bellinger last spring, but it's 10 times better to just read the results, right, guys? Okay. 20% of your customers last year were expected to win prizes in their pools just based on standard odds. Yet somehow 91% of them did. How in the world is that possible, guys?
Yeah, I mean, you know, first of all, I just have to say, there's obviously variability year to year. Last year was a tremendous year for us. We had, you know, we had one year, it was 2008. And funny thing was, it was a year when all number one seeds made the final four in that year. And, you know, people always say, oh, never pick all number one seeds, right? It's never going to happen. And, you know, our mantra is, you know, every tournament's different. You got to kind of look at the dynamics of each field and kind of do the analysis. And that year, it was a really, really strong year for one seeds. Our recommended bracket picked all ones, and we absolutely crushed it. There was some always luck involved, right? But between 2008 and last year, You know, when we got the champion pick, right, UNC over Gonzaga, you know, those are probably the two best years in the last 10, at least. But, you know, we certainly don't win every year. And that's, you know, we don't sugarcoat reality, right? Winning pools is tough. You're never going to be expected to win. But if you can win more often than most people do, you can still get great, great returns over the long term, right?
You know, it's something I'm not sure everyone understands. Like, there's no way you can guarantee any outcome. Like, obviously, but people don't seem to understand that. You can't guarantee Kansas is going to beat Penn, even though it's a 1-16 seed, nor can you guarantee your advice is going to win people money. What you can guarantee, though, is that the odds substantially increase if you apply, you know, advanced math to your bracket building process. And with that, obviously, I think comes fading the biases. Can you talk about those biases and fallacies, what they might look like and what people should try to avoid?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's nuance to all of it, I think. And like I said before, every year is different. But, you know, you can pretty much bank on the fact that in most years, for example, you know, people are going to overvalue the big favorites in the tournament. You know, even the teams that have a really good chance to win in a relative sense, you know, are typically going to be overpicked, basically. You know, there are going to be more people picking those teams to win than actually their actual odds to win imply should be picking them. And so, you know, that since you're playing against other people in the bracket pool, you really just have one goal, right? And that's you need to score more points than the rest of the people in your pool. And that's another key point of this whole strategy that many people don't get, right? Because, I mean, I'll tell you this, Bobby. If I had a dollar for every time, you know, we have to field the question that's sort of all about picking winners in an absolute sense, right? How many times have you picked the Final Four and gotten all four teams right? Or, you know, how many Final Four picks have you gotten right over the last 10 years? You know, that stuff doesn't matter in any given year in a vacuum. How many Final Four picks you get right, you know, could be good or it could be terrible. If I get two right in a year, like I think it was 2011, when it was like a 3, a 4, an 8, and I forget what other seed in the Final Four, you get one of those Final Four picks right, and you probably have a great shot of winning your pool.
Yeah.
You know, then you have another year when, you know, three of the most popular picks to make the Final Four make it. You know, if you don't get three right in a year like that, you probably aren't, you know, in the running for a prize at all. So, you know, value picking, and I know those concepts are applied to fantasy as well. You know, like in DFS, you're looking at percent ownership of players. We're doing the same thing for brackets, but, you know, I think the key to remember is that it's really brackets. It's not simple. There are 67 decisions you need to make in terms of, you know, picking winners in your bracket, and they're all interdependent. And if you take a lot of risk, you go big on a value pick with say your NCAA champion pick. The tough part is you got to figure out what does that mean for the rest of your bracket. It probably means that you need to get a little bit more conservative with the rest of your picks, but yeah, where do you do that? And that's what all the algorithms that we've built effectively do all that math for you.
That's what I'm doing this year. I am going a contrarian route with my champion. We'll talk about that a little bit later. I've got Cincinnati going, so I'm definitely going a lot more conservative with the rest of my bracket. Guys, there's so many different types of contests that perhaps the most important thing you do is familiarizing yourself with the scoring set system of your contest. Let's say most people listening are in standard scoring groups, though. 1 point for correct first round win, 2 for the second, 4, 8, 16, and then 32 for the correct champion. Just how important is it to get that title winner correct? And do you advise going with one of the favorites or taking that contrarian angle?
So David's the one that built all the optimization algorithms that take into account scoring system, which is, you know, a huge part of the value of what we bring. Actually, just Wired Magazine did a profile about the technology he built this year as well. So I'm going to let him take that one.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, scoring system plays a huge role. And you're asking about standard scoring, where it's 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64. So, yeah, I mean, in that kind of scoring system, picking the champion is kind of like the key that you create the rest of your bracket off of, right? Like getting that one pick right is a 64-point difference compared to someone that gets it wrong. And even though there are technically that many points in every other round, there's not that much of a difference between the best and the worst. You know, in the first round, the scores are going to range from like 30 to 20 or something like that in a typical smallish pool. So you really gain a huge advantage with a single pick there. So yeah, I mean, it's huge. It's definitely the most important thing. At the same time, because it's so important, you can't take a lot of risk if you're in a small pool with it. You kind of have to play conservatively. So, pool size plays a big role here, too. Like, in a small pool, you're going to want to pick one of the favorites, and it's not going to necessarily be a really exciting champion pick. It's kind of like, you better pick one of the favorites or else you're gonna fall behind. And then you can kind of make some riskier picks in some of the lower valued rounds. Whereas in a huge pool, you sometimes go for one of those, you go for a dark horse pick. And if that one pulls through and wins the whole thing, then you're kind of guaranteed to win the pool. That kind of a putting all your eggs in one basket strategy can work in a larger pool. But yeah, I mean, in a standard scoring system, the champion pick is huge.
I think that's a good way to put it.
I mean, Bobby, if there's one misconception that I think, you know, most bracket pickers out there have, especially, you know, casual folks who just kind of do this for fun every March, is just they just, in that standard scoring system, they way overvalue that first round and, spend so much time like agonizing over which first round upsets they should pick and stuff like that. And then, you know, because the tournament plays out in stages, you watch the first round and you kind of have to stew on it for the next week until the actual like higher point value games come around. Right. So everybody gets so worked up about it. And the reality is like, you know, like David said, like the difference between like a great, like 80th percentile performance in your first round picks and like a horrible, more like, you know, 30th percentile performance in your first round picks is like a couple points in that scoring system. So it's not even worth like, just don't agonize over it. Just, you know, even if you, you know, save yourself the hassle, even if you just pick all the favorites and focus on, you know, that end part of the bracket where you've really got to make your smarter plays kind of where they matter. Now, if you're in a pool with like upset bonuses or anything like that, completely different story. And we can talk about those if you want, but, you know, completely different story. But if you're just on ESPN or Yahoo playing in that, you know, kind of standard pool against, you know, sort of standard competition, then really just don't bother. Have fun watching the games, but don't pull your hair out picking that first round, because it's so unlikely to make a difference.
I mean, unless one of your later round picks goes down. Those are the important round games.
Yeah, those are the ones to watch and sweat and be very, very nervous. You know, I wrote about this earlier today. I'm 100% on board with what you guys are saying, and I explained it like this. Like, in these standard scoring systems, if you get your champion correct, it's the equivalent of getting a perfect first round or a perfect Sweet 16. Like, that never happens. Imagine that. But it's even better than that, because like you said, everyone's going to get 20 to 28, 29 points. Maybe someone will get 30. So you're basically just gaining like 6 to 12 points on the field if you do really well there. Whereas if you get your champion correct, you're gaining 32 points on the competition. So I think for those standard leagues, it is extremely important. And I love, David, what you said about, you know, the league size, or the group size, how important it is, because I drew out a table basically explaining how much your odds increase depending on who you pick on your group size. And for instance, in a 10-person league, Duke is the best pick. Villanova is right there. And then you get towards, you know, 200-person groups, 500-person, and you're looking at Cincinnati, Purdue, Houston. It completely changes the landscape. So again, the scoring system depends, you know, your strategy changes a lot with that, as does, you know, the league size.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely generally the case. Yeah, you're right. Like, those big long shots don't come into play unless their odds to win the tournament are higher than your naive odds to win the pool, basically, right? Like, that you never pick a 2% title team if you already have a 10% chance to win your pool. That's just silly.
Exactly. Now, if you're in one of these contests where Cinderellas really matter, are there a few first round upsets that you got all are more fond of than others? What about double digit seeds who could get to the Sweet 16, maybe even Elite 8?
This year is actually pretty tough for first round upsets. We just posted our early write-up. We do a write-up on Monday and on Wednesday talking about the bracket picks that we make. And there's a section on there about potential first round upsets. And we looked back at the first round win odds for teams, for underdogs, the past few years compared to this year. And generally, there's a few double-digit teams that have 40% or even are favored to win. And this year, I think the only one that we have, according to our numbers, that that has a higher than 40% chance to win is Loyola Chicago, and everything else is, you know, we have San Diego State at 38, and then it drops after that several more percentage points. So it's a really tough year to find those first round upsets, I think.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm looking at all these games, and you know, usually there's like two or three where it's like everybody's picking them. And you know, I know a lot of people are picking New Mexico State. They watched the selection show and those guys were all oohing and aahing over New Mexico State. Clemson isn't the best five seed ever, but like they're pretty heavy favorites. And so there's not really any easy first round picks this year. It's kind of a bummer. I love the Loyola Chicago pick. Again, they're not favored, so I don't love it that much. But the other one that really intrigues me is College of Charleston. I think we could be looking at that 12 seed, 13 seed matchup in the second round with New Mexico State Charleston. And, you know, when I say we could be, it's like a 10% chance. That's what all the numbers are saying. But, you know, a 10% chance, think about it this way. Arizona has a 10% chance to reach the Elite Eight. People are going crazy over Arizona. They think that that's, you know, very realistic. So it's a decent chance that it could be a 12-13 seed there in that region.
Yeah, I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility. It looks like we have Charleston with a 6% chance. So it's possible. I do like, though, Charleston over Auburn is an undervalued first round pick, I think. It's only a 22% chance, so it's one of those long shot first round picks, but we have a 22% to win, and then the public is only picking them 12% of the time. So that's a pretty big difference. So, I mean, like we were talking about, in a small pool, you're probably not going to want to do that because a 20% chance is not a good risk to take generally. But in a larger one or something with an upset scoring system, that one makes a lot of sense. I was actually looking at that game before I came on because of the Anfernee McLemore being out for Auburn. He's not coming back. So we have a thing called a game score that's basically margin of victory adjusted for opponent and game location. So it allows us to compare performance in different subsets of games fairly. You know, it adjusts out for schedule and everything. So you can see how a team played with and without a player, even if the set of opponents they're facing is different, right? So with McLemore and everyone healthy, Auburn played like the number 9 team in the country in that subset of games. And then since he's been out, they played like the number 47 team, basically. It's been a huge difference. I mean, they're bubble team quality, basically, without him. And I think everyone knows that, right? Like he's second in the country in block percentage. He's the team leader in effective field goal percentage and true shooting percentage. Like he's a hugely important part of their team. People are aware that he's out. That's not like big news, but quantifying it, it's a more stark difference than maybe some people realize. And then on the other side of that game, Charleston has a guy named Brantley who didn't really become a starter until a couple months into the season. And without him, they were playing like number 160 best team. And then since he's become the starter, it's more like number 100. So they're actually a little bit better than the full season numbers show as well. So
wow, still a pretty big difference between them and Auburn.
It's still a big difference. And I also don't want to say that just because they played like number 47 and number 100, that's not really what we'd have them rated as. You know, we have some prior estimates of how good we think they'll be, and we regress those numbers towards those estimates. So it's not just like, oh, they played 10 games, this was their average, that's their rating. Like it's not that simple, but it's still illustrative to see how much of a difference there is having one player or a couple players out. And I think that game, like the line kind of confuses me. I don't really understand. I mean, I hate to say, oh, the line is wrong. Like the market is smart. There's probably something that I'm not seeing, but it's tough for me to see how the line on that one is Auburn by 10.5 with the way the teams have played with their current makeup.
Yeah. You know, another situation like that, kind of the opposite, though, is this Missouri Tigers team. I can't figure out what to do with Missouri. Yeah. They've earned an 8 seed without Michael Porter Jr. And I know you don't have much data on Porter Jr. because he's played yeah. 2 games and hasn't looked very good, even though he might be the best player in the country. They've likely got a first round pick, 2 other future NBA players, plus Michael Porter Jr. is now expected to start during the tournament. I think of it this way, okay? If Arizona was without DeAndre Ayton, I'm not sure they would even make the tournament. I mean, you've got tons of people picking them to get to the Final Four. So what does that say about Mizzou, who earned an 8 seed and now add someone who might be even better than Ayton? How do predictive models deal with such a massive change for that, like this?
Yeah, Mizzou is a thorn in my side this year for sure. I mean, besides Porter only playing the one game, basically, I mean, they had three starting guards go out this year, I think, one to suspension and one to injury. I think it's someone else just got injured. So
they're missing one of their guards, one of their key guards for the first game, but he should be back by the second game.
Well, at any rate, at the same time that Porter came back, they basically had a couple of other changes in their team. So they're essentially an unknown. We have no data, really. I mean, we can guess, like, it's not a complete guess, right? We have the player stats from past years. We have recruit rankings. So we have our preseason rating based on that. And then we can adjust that based on who's going to be on the team when they play this weekend. This week, maybe they'll make it to the weekend. But for something like that, you know, there's market data that we can use. And if we're not sure about something, we have no ego about it. If we can't make a good rating for a team, we'll look at the market data and use what the market data says. We're not like stubborn about it has to be something that we came up with, right? We want to make the best odds possible. So
that's fair.
For something like that, it's mostly just look to the market on that game, I think.
I'm so intrigued by them because you're looking at their second round matchup and they get Xavier, who, you know, if you look at all the predictive models out there, yours included, obviously, Xavier's like a low 2 seed, high 3 seed. Like, that's their actual value. They were maybe the luckiest team in all of the country this year. And so you've got Missouri, who they played like an 8. They're getting Michael Porter Jr. And then they got Xavier in the second round, assuming they can get out of the first round. I don't know. Maybe Porter keeps playing like a turd. And I don't know, this matchup, I could see Missouri going to the Final Four or just completely flopping. And I don't know what to do.
I mean, yeah, any team in that 8 slot, there's kind of that huge hurdle in the second round. So it's a kind of a boom or bust situation. If they can make it past the game against the 1 seed, they've obviously proven something. There's a good chance of them making it a little bit further. Same thing for the 7-10, like South Carolina last year, once they got past Duke, you're like, well, anything's fair game after that, right? So, I mean, I see what you're saying there. I don't think Missouri came up much when I was doing the write-up as one of our undervalued teams, but it's probably partly because we had a little bit of trouble with them, and, you know, we kind of didn't take a big stand on them and kind of went with the market, but I mean, yeah, Michael Porter Jr. definitely has the potential to drag them into a later round.
I want this to be known for everyone listening. Like, I'm not recommending them as a sleeper pick. Like, I guess if you're doing if you're getting a lot of exposure, a bunch of brackets or whatever, yeah, maybe throw Missouri into the Elite Eight once. But I don't have enough confidence to make this pick. That's why I wanted to ask you guys, because I don't know what to do. You know, there are a few other, you know, 7, 8, 10 seeds that I think could make some noise, get that big upset in the second round. Seton Hall stands out. Texas A&M, Texas. They're sitting there with Mo Bamba coming back from his toe injury. And then you've got Butler, who's always dangerous. And again, the predictive models love them. I don't like their matchup against Purdue, but Butler is a dangerous team. They could have been a 6 seed. I don't know why they're a 10. All four of those teams kind of stand out as someone who could get into the Sweet 16, maybe the Elite Eight. I don't know which one to pick, but are there any of those four that you guys really like?
Yeah, so I'm looking at our data grid right now, and the top 5, 7 to 10 seeds that we have advancing to the Sweet 16 are Texas A&M, Seton Hall, Missouri, Texas, and Butler. So,
wow, okay.
Good job. You don't need our product.
That's awesome.
I mean, they're still low. The odds are in this. They're all really, really similar. It's like the 15 to 17% range. But those are the ones that if I had to pick a handful, it would be it. And the most, a couple of those are more undervalued than the others.
Okay.
Like, A&M and Seton Hall are only being picked by about 5% of the public, and the others are being picked at a 10% or higher rate. So, you know, even though they all have the same odds, the ones that are being picked less are generally going to be the better picks for your bracket if you want to take
that makes
example.
Sense.
So
yeah, no one wants to bet against North Carolina. They won the championship last year and everything. Previous championship teams have not done as well. And, you know, Texas A&M, they've got a big boy down there, Robert Williams. He's a beast down there on defense. And I'm excited to see this game if Texas A&M can win in the first round. And, you know, it's kind of a bummer. Like, you've got all these 5 matchups where it's like 20% chance. That's a long shot. One, maybe two of them is probably going to do it, but You know, it's just so hard to figure out which one, and that's what makes it so fun, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's also, you mentioned you don't know which one's going to happen, and that's actually one of the things I like about during the tournament, playing a big portfolio of brackets. I like to enter a bunch of lower money pools and just put in 20 brackets across a bunch of pools, and then I have this set of, you know, it's kind of like playing DFS or something, someone doing a whole bunch of entries, and you arrange your portfolio there so that you have a variety of champion picks, a variety of underdog picks, and I enjoy doing that, because then I usually end up winning something because I have a good, you know, a good breadth of gambits in there.
You've always got something to root for going into that last week too, because it really stinks when you've got one bracket and it's like, well, Xavier lost in the second round, so I don't really have anything to root for. If you've got like 20 of them, you're going to have fun the whole time.
Yeah, and then I got my futures bets, and I got my, you know, season-long pick'em contests. I always have something to root for. Yeah.
Like David was saying, though, you know, it's the concept of that, you know, sort of portfolio of brackets. Well, first of all, that's one thing that our, not to shamelessly plug here, but that's one thing that our product does that I don't believe any other one on the market does, is that, you know, we not only kind of use these algorithms to optimize the and figure out the best bracket for your pool, but for every type of pool, like for a combination of your scoring size, your scoring system, and your pool size, we'll produce a panel of 5 to 6 brackets that you can play together, and the picks are actually coordinated. So, you know, you basically, if you're making a big bet on you know, Purdue to win the championship in one bracket, then the first alternate bracket isn't going to be making that same bet. It's going to be kind of going with other gambits. And so, you know, that type of stuff, you know, I think when you're playing pools, obviously the problem, the great part about pools, I'll say, is it's an amazing chance to make a great return on your investment. I mean, you can get these incredible and expected profits out of playing in bracket pools. The problem is they're only once a year, right? You only have this one shot to make it, and you still have a very, very low chance of winning, you know, in any one given year. So, you know, how do you kind of counteract that? You counteract it by, you know, you can play tons of brackets, and, you know, your chance of winning does go down a little bit, because you're, you know, the second bracket that you play, if you're playing the optimal bracket with your first, then by definition, the second one you play has to be, is probably a little bit worse than that. And the third one's a little bit worse than the second, and down the line. But still, so you're sacrificing, you know, a little bit of kind of expected profit in the long run, but you're greatly increasing your chance that you actually get something back in the current year, and also have a lot riding on lots of different games. So one other thing you said, Bobby, that I wanted to touch on too, which I think is interesting, is that, you know, you kind of said if there are these 5 upset picks and each of them has a 20% chance of making the Sweet 16, you know, how do you pick which one is gonna make it? It's an interesting question for bracket strategy, because you know, one valid kind of way to look at this question too, or one thing you need to be thinking about, is if you don't have tons of brackets, if you're only playing one or two, is it a better strategy to try to guess which one of those 5 teams is going to make the Sweet 16, say, as an underdog, and you know, take an 80% chance of getting it wrong? Or is it better to just pick all the favorites and just, you know, assume that you're going to, sure, you're only expected to get, you know, 4 out of the 5 right, but, you know, that still may be the better strategy if you're not playing a lot of brackets, number one, and if you're playing in a smaller pool where taking like a lot of risk, you know, picking long shots really can be counter, you know, can be have a bad effect on your odds to win the pool.
Yeah, that is a dilemma that I've been dealing with. So I'm really glad to talk to you guys. thank you for coming on. You know, I recall last year Wichita State was a top 10 team, but was somehow like an 11 seed. Why don't they just let you guys pick the bracket, right? I mean, are there a few overseeded or underseeded teams that our listeners should be aware of?
Well, as a Kansas fan, I'd like to point out that Penn was underseeded. It should be higher than a 16.
They could have been a 13 seed. That is bizarre.
Yeah, actually, I was looking at our ratings that we use, and like not the raw ones on the site, but the ones that we manually adjust for our tool for the tournament. And yeah, I had Penn as the, I think, last number 13, if you just go by those ratings. So it's an insanely difficult 16 seed. I mean, that's not a very useful one for a bracket contest unless you're in a huge upset scoring system type of pool, but
yeah.
If you pick the first 16 seed though ever to be the number one, and it happens in one of those big pools, I mean, that's like bragging rights for like 17 lifetimes.
Yeah, I mean, and here's the thing is, like, you know, Kansas isn't exactly a one seed either, based on all the metrics out there. Like, they're probably a low end two seed, and they're extremely volatile. They could lose this game. It's like a 1 in 20 chance, maybe a little bit better than that. That's the same chance as like Michigan State winning the title, and everyone thinks that's possible. I mean, Penn could.
It's definitely the most possible 16-1 that I can recall seeing. It's got me a little worried as a fan. I mean,
I'm sorry. I know you're a fan, but that would be really fun for everybody else.
You should remember, though, Bobby, that we don't want smart people seeding the teams, right?
Yes.
If the NCAA asked us to seed the teams, we would say no, because so many people out there are basing their bracket decisions on these blind assumptions that one seeds are better than two seeds and two seeds are better than three seeds. And you know, that's where sharp players get at least a decent portion of their edge, is just, you know, erase the seed numbers off your bracket and look at other metrics to evaluate the teams.
Yeah. It's that is really funny. Now, were there any other that, you know, I mentioned Butler earlier, who's a 10 seed, really could have been a 6 seed. Is there anyone else who stands out to you that should have, frankly, just had a higher seed and might play above their seeding?
So I don't know, when you say should have had a better seed, if you're talking about in terms of quality of the team, I could throw out some ideas. If you mean like based on resume and stuff, I didn't really pay attention to that. But yeah, just quality wise, it seems like San Diego State is kind of underseeded. We have them around, looks like 7 or 8 quality. Davidson is about 8-ish. So wow. those are a couple double digits that could be higher.
And neither of them have very good matchups in the first round either, which really stinks, because I would love to pick those teams.
Houston, who we have as about a 4 or a 5, and they got seeded as a 6. So,
and Kentucky's been playing amazing basketball lately. They've beat 5 teams ranked in the, you know, that are top 9 seeds in the past month. They're really getting it together, top 5 preseason. So that is not a good matchup for Davidson either.
Yeah, that's another one that I looked up before the call, because I thought you might want to talk about them. Where I used our tool to look at the game scores, and so they've had some, you know, injury issues and players missing time, which I think has kind of dragged down their perception this year. And in games where they were missing players, they've only played about as good as the number 50 team in the country. But then since they've been full strength, they're a top 20 team. But then beyond that, this is going to sound a little funny, but they had a players only meeting after the February 14th loss. And I remember last year there was a Michigan players only meeting where before and after they were a completely different team. So this year I went through and I looked for teams that had players only meetings, and I checked out their performance before and after. And Kentucky was the only one I found where there's just a huge difference. And since that meeting on February 14th, they played like the number 2 team in the country since then. They've just been fantastic since that meeting. So, I mean, I don't know that something actually changed, but from the data, it looks like something changed after the meeting. They were playing, like I said, number 50 when they're missing players. They're about number 22 before the meeting at full strength, and then number 2 since the meeting in terms of their level of play. So that's another one that they're a 5 seed, but they could potentially be, if this performance isn't a mirage, they're 1 seed quality. So
yeah. Yeah, they're definitely a sleeper Final Four team. You know, you talked about, David, how, you know, if they had smart people picking the brackets, like, I think they're really smart. I just think that their entire goal is to make it, like, interesting, get Oklahoma in there instead of, you know, St. Mary's and Penn State. Nobody talks about Penn State as being, you know, one of the teams left out. I think they had a really good resume as well. And, you know, all the predictive metrics tend to like Penn State. There's quite a few teams that, you know, they let into the tournament because it's just entertainment value. Like, that's what they're going for, it seems.
Yeah, you think that's why they let Oklahoma in with Trae Young, right? Because everyone wants to see Trae Young in the tournament.
I do. I mean, I'm going to watch that game. I don't care that they're not the best team. You know, I know they had a great first half of the season, but I just can't see why they belonged in the tournament. But I'm glad that they are in it.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough for me to be glad about unfair processes, just because I'm
I guess so, yeah.
OCD about that.
David's like, not an engineer.
But yeah, I mean, if I try to just wear my fan cap, I do. I'm glad that Oklahoma's in there because I want to see them play.
Now, when I'm designing my bracket, like harvesting that expected value from my final four teams is an extremely important task, right? I'm looking at getting both Cincinnati, as I mentioned earlier, and Gonzaga into my final four. And while that may seem odd to everyone listening at home, most of the simulation models I've seen have them as the number two most common Final Four teams from their region. I think I can get myself a nice advantage over the field in terms of expectancy. I mean, it might not work out, but it certainly increases my odds of winning. Do you all have some other Final Four picks that you guys are considering that increase your odds of winning?
Yeah, so in that vein, like you said, it increases your expectation because their win odds are a bunch higher than their pick percentage, right? And I'm looking at our data grid, and a couple of the top ones are Cincinnati and Gonzaga in terms of value to make the Final Four. But another one there is Purdue as a number two seed. They have, looks like, the second best chance in that region of making it, but they're a little bit underpicked. Like we were just talking about Kentucky, they have a real shot to make the Final Four. Looks like we have them third in that region after Cincy in terms of Final Four odds. Also in that region, Tennessee. There's a lot of value in that region, it looks like. I guess
they're the number one overall seed, and everyone's like, yeah, Virginia. And meanwhile, you know, they're just a little bit better. There's so much parity in college basketball now.
Yeah, I mean, I think the numbers definitely say that Virginia and Villanova are the top two, or maybe Kentucky if this newfound level of play isn't a mirage. But even though it's clear which teams are the best, they're not head and shoulders above like Kentucky was in, you know, 2012 or 2000, whatever the 38-1
Louisville
year was.
As well. They were so dominant that year.
Yeah. Yeah. That year it was like, okay, I don't remember the exact numbers, but I think we had them at something like, I want to say a 30% chance to win the tournament. I'm not sure, but it was quite a bit higher than the favorite this year, who's under 20%.
Now, guys, let's move on over and talk survivor pools to wrap up the show. Do you recommend to people that they play it safe, make some risky picks, play against public picks? How should we approach these contests?
I mean, if you played in an NFL survivor contest, it's a lot of the same concepts. You need to, there's kind of three things you look out for, right? You want to get the highest win odds as you can. You want to avoid the same picks as your opponents if you can, and then you want to conserve future value if you can. You know, we get a lot of questions about survivor pools in our forum, and the rules for those vary so much more than the NFL rules. Some contests it's like, oh, you can pick a different, you can reuse the teams every round. Some of them you have to pick two in each round. Some of them you have to pick one every day.
Some of them, anyway, you can buy back in. There's so many variables.
Yeah, you can actually. Yeah, buyback seem to be less common in the college basketball tournament.
Does it vary from, like, you know, group size? Like if you're in a smaller group, do you play it safer, or do you know, does it really not change very much in these survivor pools?
There's kind of an inflection point. If your group is large enough that you expect there to be someone that will survive to the end, then strategy changes a little bit compared to if your group is smaller and you don't expect it to go mm-hmm. to the end. So once it gets to the point where it's large enough that someone should survive the whole tournament, which is pretty large given how difficult it is to survive the tournament, then it's all the same. But before that, you know, if you're in a 10-person pool and you're picking a team every day, it's not going to last past the second weekend probably. So you don't, it's a lot less important to conserve those, you know, the champion pick. Well, it might last past the second weekend. I shouldn't say that, but it becomes a lot less important to conserve future value if you're in a small pool. And that's the main difference in terms of looking at the popularity of a pick and trying to pick an undervalued team versus trying to pick a safe team. That doesn't change as much based on the pool size, because in effect, in larger pools, you're playing for a share of the pot, and your pot share size changes based on that popularity. Basically, if you pick a less popular team and the popular team loses, then your pot share goes up. When you're in a small pool, instead of your pot share going up, it's basically your chance to win the pot that goes up and down. So those are pretty much equivalent mathematically. Like you still want to avoid the popular teams regardless of how big your pool is. And unless it's heads up, that's the one major exception. At that point, then popularity doesn't matter.
Now, guys, I've got one final question. My wife doesn't play fantasy football, but she loves March Madness and building her bracket. She's got West Virginia. I have no idea why. She's got West Virginia winning it all. Can you talk her off of this, or is it actually a decent call?
Don't you want some dead weight in your pool, Bobby?
I know I want to win. Like, her money's my money.
Oh, you're right. I guess it all comes down. You need to separate those bank accounts. It's so fashionable these days.
How big's the pool?
It's 200 people. Maybe probably 200, 210, something like that.
It's not the worst pick. I mean, we wouldn't usually suggest it probably, but they are undervalued at least. We have them with about a 2% chance to win the title, and they're only being picked by 1%. So, you know, it's twice. It's a multiplier of two there. So it's a lot better than if she wanted to pick Xavier, who's got about the same odds, but it's being picked by three times as many. So
okay,
it's not the worst. Just don't pick, if she's picking him to win the title, you should pick him to get upset.
That makes sense.
I guess.
I mean, I'm going to have a lot of upset,
but don't pick him in the Sweet 16.
Sylvester family portfolio strategy.
I've got to get my sons in there too. They're probably going to pick like Rhode Island and stuff, but you know, whatever.
Yeah, if I could make one change to the NCAA tournament from a business standpoint for us, it's that the whole thing would start on Thursday at noon or 1 p.m. Eastern, whenever it starts. And the outcome would be determined 5 minutes later. And then we could all just see who won and who didn't win. Because with a pick like that, right, you pick West Virginia. And it's just, you know, you've got a certain, once the tournament starts, you've made your picks, the die is cast. You've got a certain percentage chance that you're going to win with West Virginia as the champion. And that's your bet. And on from a winning the pool standpoint, it doesn't really matter if they lose in the first round or if they lose in the final, right? If you're out, you're not going to win in either case. But the problem
is not quite true, Tom.
It isn't.
If it's another long shot, you could still have a chance if you make good picks outside of that. That's one thing that I think people don't take into account enough, is that you're not actually out if your late pick goes down. Everyone else's late pick goes
some down. Random team is going to win that's not in the top 20, and nobody's going to pick one of those random teams. Like, nobody's going to pick Arizona State to win at all. Arizona State's got like a 0.4% chance. You add all those 0.4% chances up, probably not that high, but you add all those up and it comes to 5%, right? So
that's kind of the our big, not necessarily our big strategy with this, but you know, a strategy for big pools here that people don't realize, and something that we kind of sort of discovered early on in our research, is that, you know, if you're playing in a big pool, for example, you know, and you've got the choice between taking a popular team, you know, popular, say, tournament champion pick or a real long shot, then you're playing against 1,000 other people. I mean, effectively in a pool like that, if you pick a popular team, and, you know, it's still going to take a lot of luck, a decent amount of luck, you know, that team actually wins the tournament. You know, you can catch a good luck year, say that team does win the tournament, but then because so many other people picked them, you're effectively at that point, you're in a mini pool, let's say, against the 200 of the 1,000 people who picked that same team as you. And you've kind of got to hope that your earlier picks were better than theirs, right? You know, the flip side is basically if you go with the long shot approach, and, you know, it's going to happen a lot less often, but when that long shot wins, you know, you're obviously, your odds to win it, you might be, you know, there might be only one or two or three other people, even in like a pretty big pool, that picked them. And, you know, most of the time, certainly not all the time, but there are, you know, are cases where, you know, you can make a good case that the long shot approach is the better way to go.
Yeah. Now, we mentioned Houston as one of those long shots. Another couple that I like, Ohio State. TCU has a gauntlet to go through. They got to beat Michigan State and Duke, but TCU is a pretty good sixth seed. I really like Wichita State as well. I mean, they've got the coach, and I think they have a pretty good path besides Villanova. So those are some really long shots that I like. Again, less than like 1% chance that any of them win. Anyways, guys, that's all for today's show. We really appreciate you coming on. Where can I point my listeners to go find your stuff? Because I'm telling you guys, I have a team rankings account this year, and it is beautiful. I'm going to win this year. I'm definitely going to win this year because they have so much information there, and I want you all to see it. Like, when I found pomegranate juice, I told everybody on the show about it. And I had a lot of people write in saying like, yeah, that's really the best drink I've ever had. Thanks for sharing it. It's the same way with Team Rankings. This site is awesome. So guys, where can they find you?
TeamRankings.com/pomegranatejuice. we actually, if you go to TeamRankings.com/fantasypros, easy to remember, put in a plug for you guys. We got some special discounts that we put together for Fantasy Pros listeners. So it'll take you right to our bracket picks page right now. And you'll get to see all the features we have there. We've also just launched a free tool. Once you get there to teamrankings.com/fantasypros, if you look in the top nav, we've got a free tool called Game Predictor, where you can get just actually a little free sample of some of our predictions and data and match up any two teams against each other in the NCAA field and see how different algorithmic models would predict it. And some matchup stats for all the games as well.
Awesome. All right, guys. Tom, David, thank you for coming on the show. And for everyone listening at home, make sure to tweet at me if you have any March Madness questions. If Team Rankings can't cover them, I'm sure that they can, but I love talking about it anyway. So hit me up at Bobby Fantasy Pro. Thanks for listening and enjoy your basketball.
I just wanted you to watch me dissolve.
Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without fingersticks. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM system, you can be confident in your food, exercise, and medication decisions. And all those decisions can lead to big results, like more time in range and lower A1C. Get started at Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey parents, looking for something fun to listen to in the car with your kids? Blippi and Mika have a brand new podcast, Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. Each week, the Blippi Mobile will take your kids to amazing places. Your kids will learn awesome new things about the places and things they see and hear. It's a fun, interactive listening experience for the whole family. Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.